Chapter 1. Have some faith in yourself, LP said quietly as he walked slowly into the recording studio on the college campus. LP had just turned 54, a midpoint in life for many today, and found himself thinking about the mistakes and maybe even a few of the correct steps that he had made along the way here. In the wake of the pandemic, he'd closed the doors on a couple of his own businesses, ones that had suffered almost immediately from the draconian measures taken to save lives. Now he was back at school in a music program and was thoroughly enjoying himself for the first time in many, many years. Another one of the main things you want to know about LP is that he always dressed in colors that suited his moods. He knew that loads of research has been done about color therapy and what different colors say about people, but here's his unique take. Green was when he was feeling neutral about things, like a tree or bush in a park. Orange was for special occasions and recognition associated with First Nations folks. Pink was defiance. White was loneliness, which routinely struck him as odd as it made him stick out like a painted middle line on a freshly tarred road. He almost always wore black when he was feeling nostalgic. Multicolors were worn to match with every other mood. LP disliked blue. It reminded him of new school conservatives that want to stick their nose into everything you do. Unfortunately, blue, along with black and gray, was the most ubiquitous color of clothing in North America, at least for men. It reminded him of shades of pavement. Today was a purple day. LP wore purple when he was happy. LP stepped up to the walnut-colored doors of the music studio into the stuffy, dry recording room. It had been explained to him often that moisture can ruin gear quickly. A plaque above the doorway identified the studio as Arcadia. He pushed the door open and stepped inside. It was a cavernous room with a high ceiling but no windows. Instead, there was an array of old fluorescent tube lights overhead. They flickered slightly, throwing sporadic shadows onto the dull beige walls. There were three rooms set up like a makeshift figure eight, with two large rooms surrounding a much smaller room that served as the control room. The two larger rooms were where musicians would set up their gear and jam. All three spaces were joined together by a single hallway. In the control room, there was a single keyboard, a computer with a massive screen, two 12-inch monitor speakers on stands, and a microphone that was used to communicate with artists in the jamming rooms. There were 1-inch window panes separating the control room and the jamming rooms. Airtight 3-inch doors would seal tightly behind any users, keeping out any noise from other areas. The jamming rooms had several wall-mounted baffles, which were designed to absorb sound waves and minimize reverberation. LP and his instructor, John Atman, had almost finished setting up the gear for a new recording session, and LP was checking the microphones for volume. The Aeolus and Zephyr mics were some of the best in the industry. A small but important detail that eased the frustration he'd felt just a few moments earlier, when he was up to his knees in microphone cables and Ethernet cords, feeling a little like a fly caught in a web. "Garbage in, garbage out," LP said, repeating the oft-quoted mantra of his instructor. "Correct," Atman said coldly, but with a bit of a sly look. "Glad to see you remembered at least one thing. No, but don't worry about trying to get everything done at once. Just focus on one thing, and once you free it from the entanglement, you'll be on your way to liberating everything else, and yourself," Atman continued with a chuckle. He stood in the center of the control room, hovering over LP. Atman wasn't a big man. In fact, he was quite the opposite, being tall and lean. Nonetheless, you always felt his presence, his observations. LP stopped, turned, and studied the man for a moment. Atman was in his 70s, balding, and wore a pair of wire-rimmed glasses, the type that John Lennon might have worn. LP mused, not for the first time, that Atman was probably an ex-hippie, and as such, likely had some stories that he'd have to ask about later, especially given that Atman had worked with some of the greatest artists of the last 50 years, including Bob Dylan, U2, and a host of other Grammy-winning musicians. John Atman was like one of those old pine logs you find at the bottom of the river. every ring of age surrounded by the grit of time washing over it, but proudly aware that it's substantially more valuable than others half its age. Early on in their meetings together as student and instructor, Atman made no secret about confessing that he used to have a lot of issues with alcohol and drugs, but that he was sober now. He said that it was always part of the trade, but he encouraged all of his students to stay clean and to focus on their art and techniques. His comments resonated with LP, who continued to enjoy all of the stereotypes associated with musicians. "And good morning to you too, John," LP said. Atman paused for a moment, smiled, and gestured toward the equipment. "So, this is why you're here," he said, diving quickly into the subject. "To learn," he paused, making sure his next statement wasn't misconstrued as an insult, "how to do things properly." "You bet. Today's lesson, proper miking and studio setup," LP said. "I want to make sure I get it right. I've got a lot of stuff that I want to re-record. My first efforts were a shit show, and this is why I'm here." There was a slight tone of defeat to LP's voice. Slight. Atman nodded. "Recording quality is extremely important. Many factors related to the inputs drive the final output. It's like the butterfly flapping its wings in China." LP looked confused, and then he remembered the adage related to fractal math. "One small variation at the outset results in massive differences somewhere else." Atman put his hands on his hips and drew a big breath. "Before we dive in, let's have a clear understanding about digital versus analog recording. Digital has its advantages. It's much cheaper and more efficient, but there are some downsides as well." LP listened as Atman explained that digital recordings sounded too clean and often lacked the character of analog recordings. Atman then talked about the warmth of analog recordings, touching on live mics for a real drum kit, as opposed to using samples or loops that were digitally manufactured. He also spoke about tube amps and about miking them directly to achieve a fuller, richer sound from multiple sources. This could then be blended into a final track that was much more complex and complete. It was a quality that many old-school engineers and producers strove for, Atman pointed out. Finally, he spoke of the soundstage of digital recordings, how the instruments and voices seemed to occupy distinct spaces in the mix. Atman smiled. "It's all a matter of taste," he said in conclusion. "But one thing I can tell you for sure, garbage in, garbage out." LP smiled in agreement while he wired up the last couple of mics for his session. Atman's comparison to a butterfly flapping its wings in China made perfect sense. If the inputs were wrong, no amount of work afterward would make it right. "But," Atman observed, "all that said, digital does have its advantages. Ease of use and cost savings are huge. Also, most people, which is who you're recording for, don't have the ear for it, so they may not notice a difference in sound quality." He gestured to the array of equipment. "But this is all about you and your goals," he said. "We can find a way to get the best of both worlds." LP nodded and thanked Atman. He was anxious about being the old guy back at school, but Atman and the other instructors made him feel welcome. They didn't convey any judgment. They just wanted him to be a better artist. This was going to be an interesting journey. At last, the mics were set up, the tracks were organized on Echo, the Digital Audio Workstation, DOW, program, and his guitar was tuned. "I have faith that this will work," LP said, after he'd taken a couple of minutes to warm up his voice. "Faith is for the foolish," Atman said, smiling as he hit record from the control booth. LP smiled back and dove into his newest song, "Blackbirds and Cardinals, Blackbirds and Cardinals," filling up the sky, "murmuration like a cloud. I'd copy if I could fly. Big wheels and green machines, shiny bikes with cards, riding to the cornfield, then tossing them in yards, meanings wait in bushes, trying to take flight. Surprise you with a panic, but also some delight. Firetails and starlings, whisk along the breeze, harness hope as rosy dawn pokes between the trees, Wagon wheels and Pop-Tarts. Bottle caps and goo. Kaleidoscopic colors. Drawing me to you. What about that bird alone that stepped aside as one? Isolation. What's the cost? Nature always wins, and nature always wins.